Thank you for watching Conscious Consumer Network. The live stream broadcast is free to view. You can pause and rewind live broadcasts to catch up, or view shows at a later date by accessing our free archives of all shows. Check out our broadcast guide to see what's on. You can show your support by donating to our network support fund. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or subscribe to the monthly newsletter for updates. We thank you for supporting free and independent media.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Unspun. This is episode number 34. Today, Joe Atwill and I are joined by Dr. Hans Etter, who's been on the show several times before. And of course, Hans has done several excellent series with me on the Gnostic Media Podcast. Hans, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, Jan. And likewise, great to be here with you too, Joe.
You know, it's great to be here with you, Hans. I think that your last name is actually just an abbreviation for utterly fabulous. Hans, utterly fabulous. Now, Hans.
I've never heard that before, but I'll put that in my.
I know you've never heard that. Right. I'm so original. So what have you been up to, Hans? I've been hearing lots of rumors about mysterious discoveries and things sort of similar to Tutankhamun's tomb. What's been going on with you, brother?
Well, I've been traveling quite a bit. I just got back, so I've been kind of all around the country, various areas. And this sort of research track was just prompted by, I guess I was at the midst of the Pokemon Go phenomenon. So I was going to all these different locations, and I was seeing, I was in Houston, and there's a big, square, where all the high school kids are hanging out. And there was at least almost 100 kids there. Every one of them was just looking at their phone, walking around. No, it was absolute silence. It was the strangest thing I'd ever seen. And I was like, this is something out of a movie. And I ran into that several other places. And then I did sort of ethnographic work. I installed the Pokemon Go app. And I went and joined in a park, which was pretty embarrassing for my son. He tried to disown me. But I bet this is a great way to meet girls. He's like, Dad.
Sure.
And it was. But obviously, a little bit. But that was more of an example demonstration. But that Pokemon Go, actually, that's what I was talking about in several of the articles I had mentioned. And in terms of this whole our virtual environment, programming, remote sensor, et cetera, et cetera. So I had just touched on that stuff, and I looked at that as being something very kind of way out on the speculative tip. But it turned out that this was exactly what I was talking about, engaged in real time in front of me. And as an operation, it exploded all across the country. Everywhere you'd see billboards for it, all over the country, and it disappeared. But from that, I began to look into that more, and it tied directly. Interestingly enough, it tied directly in with psychedelics, in with spiritual bed, in with everything else, to such an extent that what I viewed as more of a speculative argument in terms of music, sort of on the higher level of reordering of consciousness, of bringing the sort of symbolic reality to a completely managed or manipulated plane within the individual. And exactly as Eric Trist said, the final stage of social dissolution is the society as one individual, which is exactly what that was. But as I did research, I ended up finding, which Jan and I think are going to do an episode here in more detail, finding these direct admissions by members of the Grateful Dead discussing this in detail, along with a bunch of other ties. And so it was so clear that, I could not have imagined that I went through a lot of interview footage, but finding out that, the idea is that everyone will live in their own constructed world. There's no more language anymore. Then there'll be, Jerry talks about a sort of a consensus channel where you go and lock in and basically have your programming adjusted to the broader spectrum. And everyone is living in these virtual worlds, even condoning virtual sex where people are wearing, body sensors and having sex on the internet. Not, well, that's not on the internet, but through these virtual reality devices. So anyways, there's lots and lots of details, but it really tied everything in, and in lots and lots of ways that I, you know, by any one of these little doorways, I open it up, there's a lot of material, but I'll let you guys go ahead and...
Well, basically what we're seeing now with this Pokemon app is the fusion of reality and cyberspace. Would you agree with that, Hans?
Yeah. Well, it is, as Jerry describes it, at least this is virtual reality. This is done in the 90s, but he describes it as electronic LSD, and that's exactly what it is. Okay. It's electronic LSD. It is the term augmented reality, right? Refers to the extension of consciousness through electronic devices in a real-time scenario. With Pokemon Go, one of the important facts to notice is it's the doorway of entertainment. It's entertainment. It's fun. It's a game. It's just music. You know what I mean? So you have that initial entry point is that of your guard is down. You're doing this to pass time. So within the Pokemon Go app, in my, 10, 20 minutes I did it, what it does is it maps your space you see on your phone, visual mapping of that. So it takes the visual space you're seeing, it directs and guides you to specific focal points of activity in which you engage in the practice of taming the monsters. You get to choose an identity with very limited contours. You can, change your hair color, your eye color, whatever. But it's sort of like your identity is limited within very specific parameters. And then the game itself is quite odd and interesting in that it connects with demonology. It connects with particular direct types of demons, summoning demons, conquering demons. It relates to a book Aleister Crowley translated. So it has this whole occultic aspect. At the same time, your actions, everything you do, so it surveils everything you're doing. It has video surveillance, audio surveillance, geospatial surveillance, all at the same time, right? And you're engaging in this game, but you're being directed into specific spaces or places. You're following this app. The app is superseding the rules of the quote-unquote physical environment and providing types of actions you can undertake, including like kids were climbing over fences, going into power stations and stuff like that. But what it's doing is creating this society of one, meaning that you are completely mediated in all your interactions through either, you could say, a mechanistic or some type of social paradigm, which is completely undertaken on a virtual plane. It augments your own consciousness, and you enter into sort of a dream state, very akin to the psychedelic state. So it does operate on the same principles of psychedelic drugs. And given the fact that Phil Lesh and Jerry and the Bear are raving about this stuff, like, it's great, and we have to keep the lid on it so the man doesn't shut it down. That's our next direction. That, and again, describing it as electronic LSD, which is...
Meanwhile, they are the man. But, Hans, what I'm seeing also with this is, if you think about it, people are out running around with this Pokemon app, and then you would tie that into something like Google Maps, and then Google Maps, they're making it almost 3D, and then you have Ultra HD video now, and that's going to be getting better, and graphics are getting better and all of this stuff. So what they, would like to do is create an entire virtual reality, such as, I hate to say it, like the Matrix film, so that all of us are trapped in it while, these sociopaths are on the outside of it running it all.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it's more than just geospatial locational data. Again, it's telling people how to act. They're following the game. There's different places set up, where people are doing battles. You have to get enough points to do a battle. People, but all these people had never left their house. And I'm talking to them, and I'm in this beautiful rose garden in a different city. And all these people are just literally walking around looking at their phones. No one is even in the actual environment. But I was able to communicate with people, and it was like, for them, it was so exciting. We're out of the house. But so it's conditioning your interpretation of the world. It's gathering every type of data you could imagine. Every choice you make is being algorithmically logged. It's being quantized. It's being put into a system of mapping and modeling human behavior. In this case, though, your behavior is being controlled in the real environment through a quote-unquote game, and this thing was able to be rolled out and become a national phenomenon. Now, I'm sure it's dropped, but, I mean, I've never seen anything like it because, like I said, I was traveling across the country. I saw this every city, every state. You know, again, restaurants, play Pokemon Go here, you know, whatever, everywhere in the country. Like, instantly, this thing was rolled out. And I'm sure it's going to fade away, but this was a foray into this realm. And at the same time, it's doing the work of psychological transformation on the participants that they're absolutely not aware of, just as the Grateful Dead were doing and many other bands. And the fact is that it is directly linked with psychedelics. It is directly linked with this process of not only reordering physical space, reordering mental space, but a certain way capturing sort of the collective unconscious, the collective reality, and transforming humanity internally.
So let me ask you this, Hans. What do you think about, you know, like these, I don't know what they are. I've never played the game, but like Pokemon awards or something, you go to a spot and you get a little award or whatever. You know, wouldn't that even play into like a, you know, futuristic type money system where when you've played enough of the game, you get a point and you get to go, you know, buy some toothpaste or something like that?
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what it's doing. You have this pleasure. It's a pleasure, you know, stimulus response operant conditioning. It's so many different aspects rolled into one. Of an experiment, you know, and so absolutely the operant conditioning, the reward system, the complete subsumation of your identity into your virtual identity where you can be anything, you can change yourself, and it creates this illusion of freedom, but it's within a very, very tightly, rigidly controlled parameter. So certainly that stimulus response is that's a big part of it. It becomes addictive. That's why video games are as addictive as many drugs, because you get that reward, your reward mechanism is being fired off in your brain.
Right, and whoever controls the app is able to basically be a god almost to the individuals who are, you know, relating to it. I mean, he can or she can just create all of the aspects of your reality. And so ultimately this just ends up in a very airtight type social control where the people who control the internet and control the information that's flowing into Pokemon Go, they're telling you where to go and what to do. They're basically training all these individuals into a kind of slavery that the computer basically just delivers the input from God. You know, it's just this, it's almost religious in that, in its power. I had actually a question, Hans. How would the Grateful Dead you were referencing conversations that you have recordings of that occurred in the 80s?
Or in the 90s. Okay. Well, some of that, I have earlier stuff as well.
As you mentioned, the bear or...
The virtual reality stuff is from like 1990.
Okay, where would they have gotten that information? That's what I was wondering.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. And everyone who listens to the episode we're going to do, Jerry is extremely articulate. He's highly intelligent. He's up to speed with all the latest research, you know, neuroscience, all this stuff, and is very up to date at the potentialities of this technology. And this is when you have the virtual, there's a clip of Tim Leary when he puts on the virtual reality goggles. You guys seen that?
Yeah.
He goes into a state of ecstasy. He's like, oh, it's, you know. And this was something that I did not, that was a connection that I found inadvertently. I was just more looking at the research and tying to psychedelics. I didn't expect I would come across direct linkages and admissions and, in fact, the promotion of this. And, in fact, seeing this as the next stage of the evolution of humanity, of consciousness, so to speak.
Well, that's how they're selling it. It's the next stage of the evolution of slavery of human consciousness, but it's not actually the evolution of human consciousness itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, he talks about we won't need language anymore. Everyone can live in their completely own controlled reality where they just see whatever they want. They live in their own world, but then they'll link into the consensus.
Yeah, I think we just lost Hans there. Hans, you still there? Well, hopefully he makes it back in here.
Is already doing that.
Yeah, Hans, you dropped out there for a minute. Repeat what you just said there.
Okay, I was saying about the creation of, I lost my track, the creation of a consensus reality. I mean, everyone having their own completely individualized virtual worlds that they inhabit, right?
Sure.
Except for their connection with a channel that serves as a consensus channel or something that will link them in into the group mind or the group reality. And he says the Grateful Dead is already doing that, following Joseph Campbell's ritual mythos with all the symbolism and all the stuff we have.
You're cutting out there again, Hans.
I hope we can get him back.
I'm back. I'm back. Sorry, my internet connection's
out here. Yeah, that's...
Hans, can I ask you to do some speculation? Okay, let's just assume, and I think the assumption is correct, that what we're seeing basically is an incremental movement toward a technologic slavery. If that's the case, and Pokemon Go basically is a new, you know, approach and another iteration, not an iteration, but a new idea that's being plugged into all this, can you speculate as to how it would go forward? In other words, what would we see over the next couple of years that would expand it, that would make it more effective?
I mean, do we want to give them any ideas?
Well, yeah, don't. I mean, I think bad, but I mean, they've got plenty of ideas, so I think it's safe. I mean, I don't think Hans would give them anything new. If you can think of things that are actually dangerous to know, then don't mention it. But what do you think in general we can expect to see as this approach, you know, develops and becomes more sophisticated?
Well, first let's look at the founder, the guy that invented this game, right? I mean, it coming from Niantic Incorporated, founded by John Hanke, who had money from the venture firm InQtel, right? So we have CIA connections that helped develop Google Earth. InQtel, I'm sure you guys are familiar with that. They also put a lot of money into Facebook. And in a sense, you know, every individual utilizing Pokemon Go is linking themselves in as an information vector, right? They're linking themselves in as a vector to supply information as well as integrating themselves as part of this total information grid, the algorithmic prediction of human behavior. This is all this, it ties into all this stuff, which is where you predict people's behavior, their qualities, their choices. You have algorithms like that going on Netflix, right? But all this stuff is being put together. They have ability to store all this data. So John Hanke also founded the firm Keyhole, which is a wonderful name, the firm Keyhole, right? Looking through a keyhole, right? Spying into your mind, spying into your home. And they basically did collecting geospatial data. And it's also related to spy satellites. So basically, Keyhole was something that was doing geospatial as well as geostrategic images of terrain, buildings, et cetera, via satellites. Again, so that's the guy that came up with this fun app game. So right there we see the connection. It's first of all, you know, we have multiple planes, right? We have the plane of economy. How is this going to affect economies, relationships, production? Okay, that's one level. The next level is that of monitoring, you know, again, creating an absolute complete slave state with predictive programming algorithms that are already there based on someone's movements or gestures. They've already rolled this out, like in Indiana, they're using predictive programming to figure out which people have mental health issues and they can go ahead and arrest them, you know. So this stuff, I mean, you know, was one of those things you're going to see little pockets of that. That program in Indiana is an example of that.
Yeah, wasn't there a Sylvester Stallone movie or something like that that predicted that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was, you've got
the precog of the Minority Report.
Sure. Well, yeah, of course. And, thanks for that, because Philip K. Dick was, his last wife lives a few blocks from here.
Yeah. So, I mean, really the end game is truly, okay, well, I mentioned the levels. The next level is that of consciousness itself, right? So we're dealing with archetypal imagery. We're dealing with the essence, right? We're dealing with a deep part that before you could say could not be controlled, right? You could be in a prison cell and still, like Charles Manson, I'm in jail, but my mind should be wearing a swastika right there. Say, I remember seeing an interview with him. I can travel the universe. You're never going to keep me down. I'm free. My mind is free.
Right.
But that's the thing, is that even you have physical confinement or external authority, you still have a level of autonomy and you have a level of humanity or consciousness or whatever you want to call it, soul, spirit, mind, whatever that is. So it's also working on that level on a much deeper level to erode and transform, which is this idea of the alchemical transformation that I mentioned quite a bit. And that takes place on the transmutation of the mind space, which is what Pokemon has, and exactly what the Grateful Dead were doing. And in fact, they proudly accept that mantle and talk about the as above, so below, and even in very detailed ways describing how they are transforming humanity, or a segment of humanity, which is sort of a bulwark for this new evolution state. So, Joe, to summarize your question, I mean, there's going to be lots and lots of incremental rollouts. Primarily, it's going to be where at a certain point you cannot function unless you're locked into certain types of devices or certain types of behavior reading entities. More and more interaction will be done via computer. More and more the development, perhaps the virtual reality things, will be increased to the point where you can clamp on a helmet and go in the net in a mental place. And at that point, you're completely disembodied, and I would say completely disempowered. Whether or not Jerry or Owsley Stanley disagrees with me, I would say that that's the ultimate end game, is absolute reduction of humanity to almost like a sludge, almost an amoeba-like state where everything's being fed in and you have simple action-reaction behaviors. And everything, it's basically an erasure of a certain, of the what I would say makes us human, actually.
Yeah, what I think is going to happen is that they will get us to be familiar with this technique as something that's fun and a game, and then that will prepare us for it coming from the other side. In other words, where you're really going to get into the hard-edged slave amoeba human state is when you, in order to get at your bank account, you have to enter into the basically the other side of the Pokemon Go game, where it's a virtual reality. The bank is, you can't access your money unless you're willing to basically, plug into the system.
Well, they typically, Joe, get us, with convenience. Oh, it's more convenient. And, the road to hell isn't paved with good intentions, but with convenience,
Right. So your bills, your utilities, your food, purchasing new things like cars and then banking will all be basically entering into a Pokemon type app, which is not a game, but rather just this virtual reality where, you're just going to be moved around from point to point. As Hans said, you'll be atomized. It'll just be, you won't really interact with any humans whatsoever. You'll just be in this world of convenience, as Jan points out, but it'll be a completely atomized world where you'll be alone, and you'll be becoming more and more used to being alone and being in the computer generated world, and more uncomfortable with interacting with humans. And so the next step, basically, because this is all going somewhere, it's not just, they're not going to be static, when they're able to implement a virtual reality for all humans, it goes to extinction. Because once they, you know, as Han says, get you to the amoebic sludge state, then there really is hardly anything left to terminate. I mean, it's just, you know, just disconnecting a wire, hitting a button.
You know, Hans, I mentioned to somebody that the other day that this was a huge social experiment and system of social control, and they looked at me cross-eyed and said I was completely crazy. What do you have to say to that? Do you think it's actually a social control experiment?
Oh, I mean, I think absolutely. I mean, you know, a big tip-off point is also what I've been discovering is the media. When something is promoted and pushed, it gets that much attention. It becomes that popular. And Pokemon is something, you know, maybe you have kids, they used to trade the Pokemon cards or whatever, you know, but it's something that exploded out of nowhere. The second thing is that, I mean, if my experience before, I didn't know, I wasn't following the news. I didn't know Pokemon Go from, you know, any part of my body. I just saw these weird slave-like people wandering around staring at their phones in silence. And it was the most bizarre experience. I mean, just seeing that, I was like, what is going on here? It was like, and I was reminding, you know that show, The Prisoner. I was reminded of the Prisoner, right? Are you guys familiar with that TV show?
Sure.
Of course. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that's what he talked about in great detail, right, in that show, is the creation of this environment. And that's what it brought to my mind. You know, again, my take on it is different because I didn't know what was happening, right? And I was like, have people gone mad? I mean, is this, you know, when you see that many people walking in weird patterns and not talking and staring at their phones, it's a very bizarre experience, right? And so that, okay, in terms of someone who thinks this is not social control, then you know what? Let him just tell him to F off. No, I'm just kidding. Given the pedigree of where it came from.
It's like those who can't see the shadows on the wall of Plato's cave, you know?
Right. They just live in a completely separate dimension. They don't.
Right. Yeah. They're not in reality.
I mean, first of all, thanks for bringing out the pedigree. That's very, very important. Jan, I hope you're able to post that as some kind of alert on your site. I know I'm going to do it on Post Flaviano.
You're talking about this episode here or the new one?
I'm going to post this episode, but also just the this alert that the public should be aware of, that this is where Pokemon comes from. You know, there are a lot of people, you know, it's funny because you mentioned someone that was basically incapable of seeing the possibility, you know, that this was some sort of social control, some kind of government op. But actually, since I have a higher level of paranoia and the people I associate with, quite a few of them are worried about it. But no one, you know, people don't do this kind of research, so they don't know this pedigree exists, a pedigree that leads right into malevolent government activity. So I want to thank Hans for pointing this out, and I think it's something that we should, you know, share with everybody.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the control of the subconscious mind. It is the remapping and reworking of our, you know, deepest operational principles. So a certain way, there's transformations that could be undergone. For example, the glasses, you know, you talked about, you know, working, you know, it could be your job. You go around and you live in this virtual world. It also could be that it becomes so all pervasive and the technology improves that without being aware of it, we have our own deeper parts of our consciousness starting to be molded or melded by this.
Well, you know, some have suggested that nanotechnology could do just that, and then you're, you know, having it sprayed on you or whatever, and you don't even know it's there. But, you know, another thing that I see it, you know, people in denial of this stuff, you have these people who are, you know, basically couch potatoes, and Americans are pretty much about the, on average, the most unhealthy people on the planet these days. And you get all of these obese people, essentially, who are suddenly getting outside using the Pokemon app. And so they're excited about it because it's the first time they've been out of the house for a year. And, you know, they're getting exercise. So now it's, you know, they're hiding it in great exercise, which if these people just went outside and did stuff, would be a non-issue.
Hans, did any of the groups you saw wear uniforms?
You mean the people that were playing the game?
Yeah.
Not that I noticed at all. I don't think so in any way. I was kind of just surprised. Seemed basically like normal people, a lot of younger people, but not in any particular clothing. I would say I didn't see people that were, say, punk rockers or, lots of piercings or people like that. Tend to be more, quote unquote, normal people, right? So it wasn't necessarily, fringe type of, body modification stuff. I mean, I say that this is one quadrant, right? This is a quadrant that it's not the only quadrant, but I think that you have the gathering of data, you have the modeling of social groupings, you have all this stuff, and this is all being put into different types of scenarios, right? And then you create ways to create also, there's a very big Saul Alinsky connection too, to the dead, which I'll, talk about with Jan, but so all this stuff is about creating social movements. It's about also creating the impetus for groups to act, and then through these group actions, creating like a sense of solidarity, et cetera. And then that also builds more of a trust in the media or in the experiences, because suddenly, you're connecting with people.
Right. They have studied us, and these are, the manifestation of their expertise. And one of the things that is so frightening to me about something like Pokemon is that there might be technology that we're even unaware of as we dissect it and what we can learn about it, just from the details we're able to ascertain. I mean, you look at the neuro-linguistic programming and the May 1957 Life magazine cover story, where they bracket the great discovery of the mushroom subproject 58 from MKUltra, with on top you have the words great adventure, and underneath you have teenage allowances, and so that was a little 1957 version of neuro-linguistic programming. But, what could be going on, God help us, inside something like Pokemon, and particularly if they're able to, this is just the insertion, this is the first time the app comes out, but what's going to happen next? I mean, I think the thing could actually bleed into the movies, where basically they're going to start controlling people with their kind of virtual reality movies in theaters. And it's not too far from there to just basically having them, kind of cells where they just, are basically living lives that are being directed by the Pokemon God.
What year did they say they were planning on having all of this finished? 46 or something like that? 43? Their final year of whatever. I'm looking for the 2045 Avatar project.
Okay.
So there you go, And they got the CIA's Dalai Lama and, all the other, you've got the cybernetics, all the typical people right there behind it. So it's the 2045 Avatar project. So, 29 years, folks, that's their target to have us all encaged in this virtual slave world.
Hans, what can be done, to stop it? Anything that comes to mind, besides exposing it, getting people to be aware of it, anything else that can be done?
Well, I think that the understanding that I've been coming to is that, the level of the manipulation of consciousness, right? And the level of the manipulation of consciousness that goes beyond and below the threshold of the normal conscious mind. And that relates, you talked about movies. I mean, it's almost like embedded commands from the media. You get more and more. I think what we're seeing now is the people that are kind of locked into this will just follow, commands. They'll follow the media. They'll go and think in these stories. And if you're out of that, you don't watch television, it seems really bizarre. But I think a big thing is that our own minds, not using LSD, no way, use STP, Owsley, what it stands for, tranquility and peace, serenity, tranquility and peace. You know, Owsley, the alchemical saint, you know, that was just, you know, amazing sound engineer or whatever, also distributed these massive doses of STP that causes incredible psychosis that can last for 24 hours straight. And so the idea that, you know, our minds have been manipulated and controlled means that I think that we have the diligence to actually develop our awareness of our own minds, of our own bodies, of how we're acting, how we're interacting, to develop a type of understanding, whether that's doing something like martial arts, whether that's, you know, spending time in nature, whether that's, you know, doing type of a physical craft. I think anything to ground ourselves, but as well as I think exposure is very important, because a lot of this functions on the virtue of unconsciousness. And I think what's going to happen is we see more and more segments of the population go under this sort of the mantle or the dome of this kind of mind control activities. You know what I mean? Almost. If you look at the whole array of stuff, which, you know, I mean, people talk about targeted individuals. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of the people I've heard talk about that sound like they're a little bit crazy. I mean, maybe they, I don't mean to dismiss anybody, but there is all kinds of technology, you know, related to the electromagnetic frequencies, to all different kinds of other things, you know, to change the entire mood of a population. I mean,
well, who created that? Wasn't it, didn't you and I cover that it was Julian Huxley who came up with the tinfoil hat idea?
Yeah, he came up with it. But, you know, the fact was that there's a guy, he had invented some product. He was,
The tissue culture king.
Tissue culture king. Yeah. You know, I mean, this stuff has been rolled out and thought about for a long time, but you know, as an example, anecdote, which I'll have to look up the details, but basically this guy, he was in a hospital. He had like a freak out with his wife and had some kind of road rage incident. This is, you know, I don't know, the '50s, I think. And he ended up being implanted. He had some stuff implanted in his head. And he was describing all this stuff, and then his caring psychiatrist allowed him to make a giant body-size tinfoil suit. He became like the Tin Man. But this guy was in the media talking about what was done to him because they implanted stuff in his head, right? And then, you know, Delgado and all those guys, you know, Delgado discovered you could do this stuff remotely with radio frequencies. So, I mean, I think that's the other level, but, I mean, you know, the other thing is that it's not that easy, right? If it was that easy, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right, we'd already have the implants, yeah.
Yeah, or you know, it wouldn't even be necessary because we've been, you know, reduced to a state where we're no longer aware of our own direct sensory experience, as well as having enough understanding of our own minds of who and what and where we are.
Well, Hans, you just said it. Who, what, and where. Okay, so what are they trying to do? They're trying to get us to believe that reality itself doesn't exist, and that is your who, what, where, and when, you know?
And why, you know?
Well, you have to have who, what, where, and when to come to why to be able to explain how. So, you know, they're amputating the reality aspect, which is the who, what, where, and when.
You know, exactly. And even with GPS, I mean, you know, it's great, but what if you can't read a map? You know, I mean, I had a skill deficit, right? I was using GPS and then I couldn't find my way to my own street. Well, it wasn't that bad, but I mean, you know, you start using this external device, you offload, and this is a cognitive, it's called the process of offloading cognitive processes, right? This is also how, you know, it's the basic evolutionary function of mankind. If you don't need to think about something, you can put that in automatic, your brain will no longer devote energy to that person, right?
So sure. And then, you don't have to go out and buy a Thomas guide every year.
Yeah. But I mean, at the same time, you know, GPS, you know, how many times you've been taken to some weird street, you've been lost. I've had my GPS take me to some very unpleasant areas, you know, when I've been driving across the country, you know, probably accidentally. But, I mean, that's an example. But GPS is just one small facet, and GPS is actually extremely helpful in a lot of ways. days, right?
But absolutely.
As you
and imagine how much gas and time it saves. And you know, you're on the road and you can look at your GPS and you can tell the person, I'll be there in 6 minutes, you know? And then sure enough, you pull in 6 minutes.
Yeah. And that's a miracle, right? It's great. But when you combine that with you know, every type of data that's being called, right? So even what websites you visit, how long you visit them, what purchases you make, what days you make them, you know, whatever, you know, you start to, and then with facial recognition software, you know, you start to develop a very, very detailed and advanced picture of data points about human beings. And then, like I said, the Pokemon Go is not only are you, you know, on Facebook, you know, interacting with people or your virtual self, but now people are, the actual environment is being superseded by this stimuli, by this thing. And that's what, you know, when people are going outside and encoding that. And actually in the Pokemon Go, they have these weird little like surveillance drones flying around. I said, what are these? I was like, what are those? Oh, that's just part of the game. Well, I see there's like surveillance drones that they show in various junctures and in different localities.
Even right? Getting people to just, it's just a surveillance drone. Don't worry about it. You know, and then when they'll be flying around their own houses and they won't even give a damn.
It's all part of the game.
It's all part of the game. Dumbing the dumb down.
Yeah. But I would like your guys' input just a little bit on how this, to me, Like I said, I didn't expect to see such a direct correlation and a welcoming and a predicting of this by Jerry Garcia. You know, I didn't expect that, but it's there. And that makes it much more than just speculative to say that the LSD and these things were not part of this longer, envisioning, right, of mankind, at least certain segments of mankind. And yeah.
Well, I think, you know, if you want to look for sort of the origin of Pokemon Go, just look inside the research projects that we know about that were going on with MKUltra.
Absolutely.
Look at the kind of control over the individual that they were trying to study and bring about.
Well, you know, what I find interesting, regarding this whole thing is Jerry Garcia himself being on top of all of this stuff. Now, when you think of Jerry Garcia, you think of this, rocker strung out on LSD and cocaine and heroin and going to rehab clinics and things like that. But it's very similar to Aldous Huxley himself, Mr. MKUltra architect. And that, we're sold that he's this playwright and this fiction author. And meanwhile, he's on top of all of the latest neuropsychology studies and, all of the game theory and cybernetics and all of the rest of it. And he's engineering this whole CIA project against humanity. So here we see a similar modus operandi with Jerry Garcia.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting. In all the interviews I went through interviews with some of the original Merry Pranksters done in the early 70s. These guys are just fried, right? They're erased. You know what I mean? They're, I bet that you can get some information from them. But Jerry and Owsley are extremely intelligent, highly articulate, very well versed in science, electroacoustics, human physiology, you know, the latest in, you know, imaging, sonic effect of strobe lights on, you know, audience entrainment, all this stuff. And these guys are very much aware of that. And, I would say that, you know, they have a very excellent grasp of a lot of in cutting edge. I mean, if you look at what he was talking about 20, you know, plus years ago, he was right on the cutting edge of this, you know, reading the Brain Journal, reading, you know, academic journals. Not that a rock star can't do that. But when you look at, you know, the different body of influences that arose and how this was connected with all this experimentation. And then
Well, the question becomes, why is a rock star reading all of this stuff? And then when you look at the Grateful Dead, you see the implementation of it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that the question, though, is not that whether or not a rock star can do it. It's just that why is there such an enormous chasm between the insipid lyrics of the Grateful Dead songs and something like speculation in terms of virtual reality? I mean, the Grateful Dead's lyrics in general are basically for drug-addled children, I would say. And so you're just, there's something inexplicable about, a group of them. Maybe one would have this little arcane understanding, but if a group of them were discussing it, then you'd think that these kinds of sophisticated concepts would be reflected in music, and they're not. And I think it's because the music was basically part of the operation that was timely to that moment in culture, where they were taking the baby boomers, and trying to get them into just basically this sex, drugs, rock and roll communal thing. But in fact, you mentioned the pranksters being fried. Well, yeah, there were Neil Cassidy, and I've actually seen other interviews with people who were pranksters that were just brain dead. But at the same time, you have Stuart Brann, who never came across as someone who was anything other than a technical controller. Krasner, I believe, was one. I listened to an interview with him, and he was, very articulate. So you have different, I think, functions. You have useful idiots, people that they've swept up to provide basically a kind of veneer, a costuming, of what they're trying to get people to do. But in fact, the people who are manipulating don't take drugs. I really wonder if, for example, if Tim Leary and Jim Morrison and all of the people I know were in the op who promote LSD ever took it. I wouldn't be surprised at all to learn that they did not.
Well, supposedly Ken Kesey was taking 400 mics.
Yeah, supposedly. And these are the stories. But something, I just want to speculate. And I think that people who were aware of the op, aware of what MKUltra was trying to do, and aware that the drugs produce psychosis, they don't need to take the drug. They need other people to take the drug. So that's why, I'll give you just one example, Hans. If you've ever seen the audio tape of Ken Kesey supposedly on LSD. I mean, this is completely fictional. It definitely is Kesey. It's his voice, and he's, talking about being on LSD, but the whole thing is fake. I absolutely guarantee you. And so that led me to wonder if all of his trips were simply speculation. If you get a chance, check that out, because you'll see that he references, the great eye, hieroglyphics, pyramids. I mean, it's just, once you plug him into the Freemasonry part of the op that is visible with the Grateful Dead, I think you can, pretty much guarantee that this LSD experience is fake. And then bear in mind, he's claiming that he's recording it, himself, that the CIA handlers are not actually, working the tape recorder. He's been left alone supposedly, and he's manipulating it, which is just, of course, ridiculous methodology. And so anyway, I don't know, and it wouldn't surprise me if they did take it, but it also, I'm willing to speculate that they did. And I think,
well, here's one thing though, Joe. We do have one document from the CIA stating that they did require all new recruits to take LSD at least once.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've speculated that this is the one time that, for instance, when I was at Professor Carl Ruck's house, he's the one who invented the word entheogen, who worked with Gordon Wasson. He told me during the interview at his home that he had taken LSD one time. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that one time was for the CIA. But here's the thing is, if they didn't have at least one experience with it, and somebody you know, they're out dosing all these people and somebody doses them, then they might be in a pretty bad predicament.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, so I would think that they would at least need some tactical sort of training.
I agree. That it makes perfect sense. But it's, I just think that the citizen should look at all of their claims suspiciously. And so I know a lot of the drug use that Terrence McKenna claimed was fake, and it was just being done to basically get people to take these so-called.
Terrence McKenna would tell everybody to take heroic doses of 7 grams, and then he hadn't even taken them himself in 12 years or something like that.
Yeah.
You know? So, and then of course Dennis McKenna tries to water this all down in his book and makes up a story about it. You know, oh well, he actually tried psilocybin during that period. He did that once as, you know, a cover up for Terrence not taking the mushrooms themselves during all that time.
I mean, and it's also possible that, you know, I'll play some of these clips where, you know, Owsley is talking about going to the first acid test and describes it as absolutely terrifying. He said they were doing something very bad. There was some very, very dark energy there. And he was, he described this and which is very telling and very interesting. And you look at some of these clips of the acid test. There's one acid test graduation on YouTube. You look at that. It's very dark, very demonic. They have guys wearing lab coats setting this bed on fire as part in part of the clips there. So there is a possibility, like say with the ayahuasca ceremonies, where the leaders of the ceremony may have a small dose where so they can get into that psychic space, but then not enough to lose control of themselves so they can maintain and shape and warp this stuff.
It's like James Fadiman's micro-dosing technique. Of course, James Fadiman is married to Dorothy Fadiman, who was one of the merry pranksters, go figure.
Yeah. Well, look at Hans, have you ever seen the hand-drawn poster of the first acid test promoting it, to get people to come?
I just showed it on screen. I think Hans had one more point he was trying to get at there.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so, you know, I wanted to disagree with you on one point that, I mean, the Grateful Dead lyrics are extremely complex. They operate, I say the Grateful Dead is probably the most occult, I don't know how to use the word satanic, but one of the most occult bands there is in terms of their lyrics. Robert Hunter was a semiotician. So the lyrics have multiple tiers of meaning. I don't necessarily want to spend the time to figure out.
I don't disagree with that. For example, I've written an analysis of Mason's Children, you know, the song that Hunter does, which is an homage to Edgar Allan Poe and Freemasonry. But the fact is that the symbolism was not something that was understood by the Deadhead. And that's what I was really referring to, is that the kind of the surface level of the songs, you know, sort of like the song Uncle Sam is in a rock and roll band. You know, that's, I think, to the listener who is an average Deadhead, is just almost without any, you know, any kind of coherency at all. But they would still listen to it hour after hour after hour. But there was, of
course,
a very sinister symbolic level, which was not something that the listener was aware of or could understand.
But that could also, if you look at NLP, this could be programming their
system. Right, that's possible, yeah.
And the thing is, the music, though, it seems it's like happy-go-lucky, a bunch of, you know, old hippies farting around on their bus playing this music, which is over on the surface is pretty innocuous, right? But below that surface, you have the longest running LSD distribution, collective mind control, implementation of, you know, neo-feudalism, Aquarian Age, you know, in the country. Right. I mentioned earlier today, there's an article in Time Magazine about how LSD suddenly just massively dropped. The statistics on LSD dropped after Jerry died, because they were distributing LSD across the country. But they're also, you know, doing a lot of other, you know, other things, you know, and then when you tie in Owsley Stanley's experience, you know, in the Air Force, 18 months in the Air Force, you know, electronics training, suddenly manages to make millions of doses of LSD, as well as you know, this sound system, you know, Robert Stark, Brotherhood of Eternal Love, et cetera, et cetera. All these different players that come into being. And what I think is most telling to me is the media. You look at the media of the time, the kind of exposure they're getting, right? The acid tests were, I think, my knowledge of them, they seem to be incredibly dark, right? Incredibly dark. People going insane. People, you know, and according to Stanley, they were, you know, basically doing witchcraft. They're doing black magic. They're summoning demonic entities. But then suddenly, after he freaked out and drove his car into a ditch, then he goes back and starts making LSD for them and manage, you know, and starts giving the money to the warlocks, which is a little weird of that about face.
Yeah, I mean, but of course, these narratives you can never trust. And I just wanted to mention one little component of Stanley that I think will be useful to know, and perhaps you do, but before the military, Stanley checked himself in for some reason for 18 months into St. Elizabeth Hospital. And if you look at the time when he was there, you'll see that it was when MKUltra was actually using St. Elizabeth Hospital as a training and testing facility for psychedelic drugs. You know, in fact, some researchers who were unaware, in fact, about Stanley's participation in MKUltra just made a statement of fact that this period of time at St. Elizabeth Hospital was actually where the psychedelic revolution began. This was where the CIA then branched out and became interested in it. And it all started right here in St. Elizabeth Hospital, which was basically the CIA's most controlled, you know, hospital. So the fact that Stanley was there for the 18 months right when the, you know, when these experiments were going on, I think is pretty clear cut that what he was getting doing at that point was being trained, you know, in the use of it and probably the making of it and different aspects about it.
Yeah, and he's a graduate of this. Well, I didn't know about that, but yeah, that's quite interesting. He checked himself in.
This is his actual story. He checked himself in. He's 16 years old. He checks himself in. No explanation. He just checks himself in, and he's there for 18 months. Wasn't that a little strange, you know, someone being just checked into a mental hospital for 18 months?
Yeah, and he also went to the Charlotte Hall Military Academy,
right?
And he's listed as one of the graduates. I have one of their brochures, and you have all these senators and all these other, you know, major people, and he's listed there on the list of William Rochester, and then you have Owsley Stanley, underground LSD cook, sound man, and financier for the Grateful Dead, listed for the Charlotte Military Academy, which is also quite interesting that he studied there, you know, and had all this background, you know, and as well as Jerry was in the military, as well as everything taking place in Palo Alto.
Timothy Leary was a student at West Point, and then he's over there at Millbrook, not far from West Point, and then
he was at Fort Dix. You know, he was at Fort Dix, and in the church commission testimony, they only reference two places where they're actually doing drugs and experimentation with MKUltra.
Just so you guys know, we got about 2 minutes left here.
All right. Well, anyway, wish we had two more hours. Just fascinating listening. Hope you can come back and we can finish this discussion, Hans. This was great. I really appreciate this information and particularly the pedigree for Pokemon Go. I hope everyone becomes aware of that and mentions it to people that, you know, maybe the public should start to respond a little bit to this overt mind control that's being hoisted on us by the government.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's a pleasure to be here and talk to you guys. And, you know, bringing out all the different information from different sides is really...
Yeah, that's useful. Yeah, very valuable. Thank you, Hans. That was really, really interesting. You know, for me...
Websites.
Website, CaesarMessiah.com. Postflaviana.org. I got a bunch of books you guys can buy. And Jan, where tell us about your website.
GnosticMedia.com, TriviumEducation.com. And of course, I've got some websites you can buy, some books you can buy. And Dr. Hans Utter, you go ahead on that too.
HansUtter.com, mindcontrolmusic.wordpress.com. By the way, I do have a couple new albums I've released here past couple days. So please buy a CD for me. I promise.
I will, and I'll play them backwards.
It's not mind control music. Aleister Crowley said, if you do everything backwards, you can gain control of the minds of your fellow men.
All right. Good. See you guys. Thank you very much.
See everybody next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Take it easy. Good night.
Conscious Consumer Network was designed to create a live broadcast TV network for free and independent media and has been live on the air since the 1st of January 2015. CCN gets millions of minutes watched every month and is viewed in over 140 countries, having produced around 1,400 shows and counting.
And you know, it's very hard to get on mainstream media, of course, the corporate media that's getting tighter and more monopolized and more restrictive for any outside information.
The live broadcasts are free to view and all shows are archived in high definition on YouTube. CCN plays host to a stellar team of broadcasters and producers, all of whom rely on the network to get their message and information out to the world. CCN has continued to evolve, constantly seeking to create greater media usage and opportunities for both broadcasters and viewers, including supporting projects such as the newly launched ConsciousCommunities.org, a brand new social media platform that is free to use and has been created for those dedicated to the pursuit of freedom, justice, peace and sustainability to come together and co-create the solutions to a better world. Due to the constant heavy usage, we are in need of replenishing and replacing of key hardware and infrastructural wear and tear. This includes the fixing and replacing of parts of the live broadcast equipment system, as well as increasing storage capacities for content and projects. Without this, CCN and its affiliate projects will simply not be able to continue. Conscious Consumer Network is a publicly funded project, and it is up to you all to keep CCN on the air.